Right about now, you are listening to the Legacy and Leadership Podcast, a show where we discuss living as a leader worth following, leading others to do the same, and in doing so, leaving a legacy for future generations. My name is Jimmy Gonzalez Jr., a learning and development professional and leadership coach, sitting down with my co-host, Anthony Devon Watts Jr., an expert contact center leader that has effectively led and developed dynamic teams with high motivation. Together, we have over 30 years' experience in the corporate game. Join us as we discuss our growth as leaders, share the lessons we've learned, and interview others to see how their leadership style was shaped as they were mentored by adversity. Well, hello there, good people. This is Jimmy Gonzalez Jr., along with my co-host, Anthony Devon Watts Jr., AKA Leadership Docent, AKA Trey Deuce, my homeboy and good friend. This is episode number 3, and we thank you again for being with us and continuing to listen, continuing to hit play, and hopefully, if you haven't done so already, subscribing, hitting likes, and continuing to share with other people the goodness that is coming at you through the Legacy and Leadership Podcast. So again, this is episode 3. We'll talk a little bit about what we're going to get into. But how are you doing today, man?
Man, I'm doing well. I'm doing really, really well. I got some nutrition in me. I had this really awesome protein bar, which I'm not going to plug their name because we're not sponsored by them. But it is delicious. I got to, work actually went pretty well, today. Really starting to get into the groove. This is week five or six in this new opportunity, man. And it's, now I'm finally just kind of getting in the weeds. So I took about a month or so just to kind of understand the lay of the land and get to know stakeholders and get to know people and, build relationships. And now, I'm really, starting to get into some work with the team, and I'm excited, man. There's a lot of good work in front of us, but it is a lot of work, bro. Like a lot, like literally building, some of these foundational things from a call center perspective from the ground up, and just not even call center related, but also just like good business disciplines. I know I mentioned in one of our podcasts, I was working on something like from a financial, engineering perspective, like redoing the P&L and all that stuff, like is some work, but it's going to be fruitful work. So I'm super excited, man. I'm super excited.
No, I'm glad you're charged up, ready to go. And they got a winner. So I think they knew that within the interview process. And I'm excited to see, again, your continued progress within, that new space, new company, and see how things continue to progress for you. So that's good to hear, man. Yeah, it's been a good day, for me as well. I'm excited about episode number 3. We switched it up a little bit. Episode number 2, for those that are viewing on our YouTube channel, you were wearing your hat. So I'm wearing my hat. And if you heard episode 2, maybe the camera, this says champion on my hat. Once a champion, always a champion. If you didn't listen to episode 2, you're going to have to go back and hear the story about the wonderful championship experience that I had in my youth playing football. once a champion, always a champion.
100%.
But within the last episode, you, Hope, had the pleasure of interviewing me and asking me some questions. And really the whole purpose of us doing this within these first couple of episodes is we want to give our viewers and our listeners an opportunity to get to know a little bit more about us on an individual basis. And so we're going to be jumping into that. I got a few questions that I'm going to be asking you about leadership, kind of how you got into leadership, some of the things that you wish you knew before you started. Yes, for those that are listening, again, thank you for doing so. We appreciate your time. Stick with us. I think this is going to be good. I've been working with my man and knowing Devon for over a decade now and have been able to see him grow. But on the last episode, I was talking about how excited I was to hear some stories that maybe I haven't heard before. So hopefully you've had time to ponder and think about that. If I've applied some pressure, oh well. I know you're one thing I do know is that you're good under pressure. So so let's go. So you ready?
Yeah, I'm ready, man. Let's get to it.
All right. So one of the first questions that we discussed is, how did you actually get into leadership and you know, develop kind of that first leadership role that you've ever had?
So kind of like you, right? You know, even before I had like my first official leadership position, I would say that there were moments where I had some inkling or some affirmations that like leadership may potentially be my calling, or I at least was blessed with certain skill sets and attributes where I felt like I could contribute there. And if anybody has had the pleasure of meeting my father, you will know very quickly that early on in my life, very early on in my life, the disciplines and the skills and the kind of the habits and the expectations of leadership were being instilled in me for a couple of reasons. One, I'm carrying on the namesake, so I'm a junior, right? So you got to make sure, you know, the little one is prepared to go out into the world and do right by the family name. And then obviously I'm the oldest and I'm the only boy, right? So you got all of those things. And, you know, one of the things I knew about my father, I've come to learn about my father, is that, you know, he's always felt like his number one calling in life was to be a father. And so I think when you have, and anybody can relate to this, when you have clarity in your calling, the level of passion and intensity and love that you pour into that, you know, usually comes in abundance. And so he knew that before I was even conceived. And so obviously, when I was born into this world, you know, he went right into execution on his plan of, you know, how to, you know, develop what he felt was a man that was prepared for what life has to offer. Right. And so my father, he's worked in law enforcement, military. And I usually get a lot, actually, you know, from people and strangers who's like, oh, hey, you know, you served. Or so are you in law enforcement? It'd be just because of how I carry myself. And I kind of tell them, well, no, you know, I've never enlisted. I never did law enforcement, but I spent 18 years in boot camp. just because of how Pops is, you know, and he even had me, you know, making my bed military style. And so I can think back to just kind of different moments throughout the course of my life where he's, you know, just really challenged me on what it takes to be a leader and to influence folks. And the example that you're setting for others, obviously the example I'm setting for my sister, we're only 2 years apart. And so she's watching my every move. And yeah, he just understood that the way that I interacted with her and the example I set sent a message to her about what to expect from other men, other, you know, other boys, and to not take that lightly. Hell, even at times it kind of got a little bit crazy. In eighth grade, I ran for student council president. This is a new school, Odyssey Middle School. Shout out Odyssey Middle School. Okay. As a part of the inaugural class, and we actually won the county championship in track. I also did soccer. I was the MVP for both of those things. And so sports was a huge part of my life and a huge part of my leadership development. But I remember telling my pops, like, hey, I think I'm going to run for student council president. I promise you, I could have swore I heard that man, like, when I told him, say, finally. You know what I mean? And he was just, he had already had this like 6-point chess strategy, you know what I mean? On like how I'm going to win the election. I felt like, you know, he had turned into like Karl Rove or James Carville. He's like, all right, this is how we're going to expand the map and win the electoral college. I'm like, Pops, it's just a middle school. It's just a middle school student council election. Right. And even in that moment, man, like, I remember we had to, go on announcements. And so mm-hmm. each of the candidates, you had to sit on the announcements and they talk to you about like your platform and why you, but you know, there's varying degrees of people listening. Right. And so, I remember some of the folks that went in front of me, you know, they were talking about, oh, well, you know, I want to make sure that there's, you know, good drinks and, you know, the vending machines and, you know, I want to make sure that we add an extra day of pizza and, you know, just little stuff like that. Right. And my behind, I get up there after having been trained up by my pops and just kind of, you know, he's him talking about leadership because he's been in a leadership capacity for a while. I'm sitting up there and I think I started off my address to folks about why me as, you know, I'm humbled by the opportunity to run and be considered to be the first president of Odyssey Middle School. And I know that if I have your vote and your support, you know, and I am successful, it's because I've stood on the shoulders of others, of giants. Like I promise you, he probably ripped a couple lines from like MLK and just like slid it to me. Like, yeah, incorporate that. Right. So I share that to just kind of paint the picture of, you know, just how much leadership and the seriousness and the weight of being a leader and outside of official positions. Cause before I didn't really, you know, rationalize like an official position of management or anything like that. It was just leadership is more about how you carry yourself, about how you interact with those that you love, about how you treat and interact with those that you don't know.
Yeah.
Right. And so I remember that. And then I remember probably the first moment where I really was like, oh, okay. People really do look to me for guidance in uncertain situations. I was in the first year of college. I had gone to Colgate University in upstate New York. Now, for those who don't know, I am a native Floridian. So I spent 17, 18 years of my life in Central Florida, beautiful weather. When you were doing football, like the worst it would get is, you know, it'd rain a lot. Mm-hmm. Right. But it was still like 75, 77 degrees outside. And something told me, okay, so for college, I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to go to as close to Canada as possible and play football and just let me just see what that's like. Right. And, I ended up in, Colgate University in, upstate New York. And I actually got to go up there with a childhood friend of mine who we had went to kindergarten together and went our separate ways and then had an opportunity to kind of play football and link back up as, you know, adults, young adults. And so we thought that was going to be dope. And I met some really, really cool people and some great friendships, people that I still interacting and talk to today. And I remember we had decided to make a trek to Syracuse, and Syracuse is about 2.5 hours away from Colgate University in Hamilton.
Okay.
Right. And so we end up convincing a sophomore to let us borrow their car to make the 2.5 hour drive to Syracuse. And we go out there and we, you know, have a good time. We're exploring the mall. We're getting into nonsense just because we're hard headed and we don't know no better. You got, you know, three Florida boys and like two boys from Cali, and we're upstate New York. So we're just like, well, let's see what this is about.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I recall that we got out of the mall, like we had blew like a couple hours at the mall, and we had got out of the mall. And when we got out of the mall, we started noticing that it is snowing. There's like snow flurries. Mm-hmm. Now, mind you, the sum experience of this entire group in driving in snow is 0 years. None of us have ever driven in snow before. And if you've been in upstate New York, it's also pretty mountainous, hilly, right? And so we have to make this 2.5 hour drive back to campus in somebody else's vehicle as the snow's coming down. And who do you think they want in the driver's seat? So we're trying to figure it out. And I remember all of them just looked at me like, all right, so Devon, you got this? Now, just to put it in perspective, I was clearly the youngest out of everybody in the group. Like in terms of the least amount of years on the road, that was me. Right. But I just realized, like, just looking at my team, like looking at my friends and The fact that they had confidence in my ability to get them home safely, get us back home safely, like, well, yeah, hell yeah, I owe it to them. I got to make this happen. So that was a moment, though, for me in hindsight where I could say that, you know, there was a moment of uncertainty you know, a little bit, you know, obviously scary. Yet people looked to me in that moment to provide guidance, to provide safety, to provide support. And then in terms of just like officially, my first official leadership position was actually with the same company where we met, where I started off as an agent on the phones. And I actually got to that company because prior to that, I was working for AT&T Singular. And I'd been working there for about 11 months. I was doing collections, cutting people's phones off and, you know, all that good stuff, trying to get payment arrangements. and I thought it was, I ended up getting fired from that job because I thought it was a better idea to go on a cruise than to show up to work.
I remember you telling me about that.
and so they made their decision. And so I quickly found myself in need of employment to make sure I could pay for my very first car, my baby, my 03 Impala. My Chevy Impala, I drove that for 10 years. And so, yeah, so I ended up stumbling across the opportunity. You know, it turned out to be a great experience in the sense that I was able to write my own paycheck and earn commission. I was working 30 hours, but it was like full time. And so I was banking. It was really kind of just a, I'm going to do this until I figure out what the next step is for me. And it was probably maybe about 4 months in or so that I really started to just be aware that there was more opportunity available than just, you know, answering the phones and, you know, making sales. And that was largely driven by the fact that, you know, surrounded by some leaders that, you know, I was able to pull from. And I was like, oh, man, OK, you know, they're actually making a career out of this. They're able to make a difference in people's lives, like the same type of coaching and development that I'm receiving. That's all they're responsible for doing. And when I found myself in a position where folks were actively seeking me out for guidance on how to handle situations and, hey, can you teach me this? Hey, can you listen to me? And I knew I wasn't in any type of official leadership capacity, but people, again, were looking to me for guidance in a moment of uncertainty. I said, well, let me see what can come of this, you know, how rewarding and fulfilling this can actually be. And so, yeah, and the kind of the rest is history from there. You know, here I am 12, 13 years later. And so I'm thankful for that.
Yeah. No, that's cool. A lot of things to unpack there, man. You know, we've had a lot of conversations about both of our fathers, and it's cool to hear. I feel like I heard about that eighth grade story before, but the way that you explained it this time, I could just see Pops again, just being super proud. And like you said, like, yeah, this is the moment. This is the time. And as a dad and seeing your kids grow up, like, yeah, you had those moments where you're just hoping that, you know, your child is able to take advantage of this moment. Yeah, Pops is pretty cool, man. Obviously, I've had an opportunity to have some really good conversations with him as well. And we're actually not that far apart in age.
Yeah, Pops 51.
Yeah. Pops 51. So
he can be big bro.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And then, you know, what's interesting, I didn't mention it in the last conversation that we had, but it's ironic, you know, the story that I told in the last conversation in the last episode was about an eighth grade experience. Your example is about an eighth grade experience. And even what you mentioned about that, that story in college and that driving back from Syracuse, when you think about kind of those first leadership moments, I was in an apartment with three other guys. And because of things I had been through, and my mom raised me right and taught me how to, you know, budget and take care of myself, like I was the one who was entrusted to make sure that all the bills were paid. And, you know, realizing, okay, one, like, why do I have to do this? But nah, I should be the one to do
this.
And have, you know, the discipline and the wherewithal to make sure that our electricity didn't get turned off, that the water didn't get turned off. So it's, again, kind of ironic from that perspective. But yeah, it's I remember you talked about your first leadership experience, and I remember the first real conversation that you and I had, and you know, obviously just kind of peeping you out from how you're interacting with your team. And I remember asking, I want to feel like I feel as if your desk was right outside of my office. Mm-hmm. And I called you in and we're talking, and you're kind of, you know, talking to me about your perspective and like, yeah, you know, and you know, my goal is to run my team like it's my business. And you were talking about ownership, and I'm just looking at you, but just like, man, like, for being a young man, like, this dude, he knows some things. He's already seen some things. He's learned some things, and has not just a good head on his shoulders, but just a really good perspective of ownership and accountability and what that means from a leadership perspective. So that was always cool to see that at that moment. And then again, how you just continue to grow and develop with that accountability and appreciating, I think, even more as you grew the stewardship portion and what we're being entrusted with, and why it's even that much more important to really run things like this is mine, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And not mine alone, but I have that level of responsibility and accountability. So good stuff, man. Good stuff. So you mentioned, you know, those first experiences, you know, getting into that leadership position, and people were already kind of coming to you and, you know, seeking your advice and asking you questions. And that gave you even more confidence that was something that you would be able to do successfully. But looking back at the old age of 31, when you look back, you know, 10, 11 years ago or so, what do you wish you knew then that you know now? And how would that have, you know, maybe made some things a little bit different for you at the beginning?
Yeah, man. You know, if I really had to think about it, I think, you know, one of the things I really wish I knew then that I knew now is the power in knowing the right question. Mm. Like, I think one of the things I early on in my career, like, I always just really try to pride myself on is knowing the right answer, right? Like, as a leader, like, knowing the right answer. And I put almost so much stock in that I've often found myself providing the right answer to sometimes the wrong question, mm-hmm. right? Especially for people that, you know, I was entrusted in leading, or I was developing, you know, maybe I was giving them a solution or pointing them in a certain direction, or giving them advice. And I don't know when it really clicked for me. Actually, I do know. I take that back. It wasn't until I really started to transition into out of operations and into more of a support type function. Like, I went into training, and then I started going into like workforce and process improvement and those kind of worlds where my entire existence was built around questioning why, right? Mm-hmm. So that we can get to the root cause, we can address the issue. And if I had known early on just how powerful questions are, like, there's more value in knowing the right question than there is more value in knowing the right answer. I think it would have made some of my mistakes as a leader, some of my failures as a leader, it would have lessened them. And I would have been able to lead at a higher level or contribute at a higher level, because I would have been able to get to the root of what the opportunity is. And, you know, when you ask the right questions, you can help facilitate for in other people, them getting to the solution themselves. Right. And yeah. I think that's when you're really doing it right as a leader, when you're able to stimulate a different thought or a different train of thought than they were on, so that they can get to the ultimate conclusion and they feel confident in the solution and they were the ones that provided it themselves. That's the most effective way to lead than to, you know, be Google, you know, for lack of a better term for folks, because then you create a dependency as opposed to really empowering and creating a, you know, independent mindset. And so, yeah, I wish I could pass that nugget back on to the 19-year-old me, like, hey, bro, I know that you got all the answers, but sometimes your answers are not even to the right question. Why don't you spend some time figuring out what the right question is?
Mm-hmm. That's an important skill, knowing, you know, asking the right questions at the right time in the right way. Definitely a valuable skill. And that takes time to develop, you know, to take time to develop that skill. All right. So if that's something that you wish you knew back then that you definitely know now and have learned over the years, you know, a large part of what we were discussing is legacy and kind of what we're, what we've built up until this point, but what we're leaving behind for those to come. When you think about the attributes or skill sets that you have as a leader, what are some things that you know you definitely want to be able to pass on to Gio, to Lennox, to your family, and of course, any leaders that you've developing along the way?
Yeah. For this one, I know it may sound like a little corny, those that have worked with me, over the years, you know, if you had an opportunity to attend any of like the new hire classes or anything like that, that, I usually try to speak at, you know, I've passed this word on, but, I truly believe like in the power of self-belief. Mm-hmm. And I know, again, there's a bunch of books about it and, you know, it sounds super corny, but I wouldn't be passing it on if I didn't experience the benefits of it myself. Again, I'm huge into self-help. And so I was reading a book where the author was attending this keynote speech. Mm-hmm. And the keynote speaker was this artist. And so the artist was doing something super dope. He was painting live and he was giving this speech live. He was painting, he was giving the speech, and he asked the audience, he said, you know, he was telling them actually, he told them, I've given this speech to a group of elementary students. And I asked him, who in here is a great artist? And he said, every single elementary kid raised their hand, me, I'm a great artist, right? He said, I gave this exact same speech to a group of middle school students. And I asked, who in here is a great artist? And he said, probably about half of the middle school students raised their hand and said, hey, I'm a great artist. He said he gave this same speech to a group of high school students and he asked them, hey, who in here is a great artist? He said maybe about 10% of the high school students raised their hands and said, hey, I'm a great artist, right? And then he said most recently he gave that same speech to a college graduation, mm-hmm. right? College commencement ceremony. And he asked who in here is a great artist. And he said you could count on two hands the number of people that raised their hand and said that they were a great artist. And so I was just like kind of chewing on that word and I couldn't help but be struck by the thought, like, at what point did we stop believing in ourselves and we started believing what other people told us about ourselves, mm-hmm. you know? And I think back to like, kind of like those what seemed like silly moments now, like, you know, as a adolescent, as an elementary student, but like in second grade, Mrs. Schumann's class. We had an assignment. I vividly remember this. We had an assignment, draw what you want to be when you grow up.
Okay.
I drew myself as an astronaut ninja. Like, like when I was going to grow up, my job was going to be to fly into space. I was going to get my black belt. I was going to fly into space. And I was going to defend the world, the planet from aliens using karate.
Okay.
God bless my mama, you know, she put the picture up on her refrigerator, my baby, the astronaut ninja. Right. But you know, I think about like what in that moment made me so assured that I was going to be an astronaut ninja. Right. It's not like, I saw an astronaut ninja at career day and I was like, oh, I should explore being that. Right. Like, in my mind, I believed it so much that I committed it to paper.
Yeah.
And so I couldn't help but then like, just take the next leap, which is like, what could you accomplish if you had that same level of unwavering self-belief from when you were in second grade and you combined it with the years of experience you've gained now as an adult? You know what I mean? Like, what would you be able to achieve? Mm-hmm. And I am fortunate enough, blessed enough to be able to have a testimony that for me shows me what I'm able to achieve just by having that unwavering self-belief and continue to develop these skills. I got some great experiences. I met some great people. I've been able to provide for my family in a way that I could only dream about, you know, as a young man transitioning into adulthood and, you know, trying to figure out how I'm, you know, going from getting fired and trying to figure out how I'm gonna pay my car note to, you know, where I'm at right now, and what I've been able to do for my family and, you know, position us for future generations. And I can attribute that 100% to that unwavering power, self-belief. And so if I don't do anything else, I want to be able to pass that on to Gio, to pass that on to Lennox, and to pass that on to any other leader that I have the opportunity to interact with and influence and engage with and pour into, is believe in you, and because that's all you need.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah.
Now that's self-belief, man. It is really critical to, it's not cockiness, but it's a sense of self-awareness, a sense of confidence. And it is somewhat of a shame, as you know, as people do get older, like again, when you're a kid, man, like you can do anything, and the creativity that a child has, kind of how the world, you know, starts to influence, and people just get scared, you know, and they stop believing that really anything is possible. And as a dad, definitely those are things that I've shared with my kids, and they're like, you can do anything that you necessarily put your mind to. You just have to really believe that. And hopefully, you know, you're passionate about it and you're focused on it. But that self-belief is super important. And we talked a little bit about it in the last episode too, that as much as we try to work on that and continue to believe in ourselves and our abilities, there's still going to be some situations where there's some doubt that creeps in. And you know, knowing that there's people in your past, whether it's your parents and the belief that they instill in you, or other leaders that you've been surrounded with that, again, saw things in you that maybe you didn't see in yourself. Just remembering those moments, I think, provides some of that belief as well, that, you know, maybe I'm at a point right now where there's a little bit of self-doubt, but you know what? That person believes in me, and they did believe in me in that time. So, you know what? I really need to change that stinking thinking, so to speak, and and really believe in what I'm capable of doing, and the blessings and the skills and things that God has given me to be able to move forward and accomplish whatever it is that you're trying to accomplish and you're setting out to do. So the mind is a powerful thing, man. You know, kind of cliche people say that, but it really is, you know, being able mm-hmm. to have that self positive talk and belief in yourself is powerful, especially from a leadership perspective.
No, man, you hit the nail on the head. And to be honest with you, like even for me here recently, I really had to draw on that. Like I was tested, you know, mm-hmm. you know, firsthand kind of my situation, and just, you know, obviously, you know, COVID has impacted a lot of organizations and a lot of businesses. And, mm-hmm. you know, I found myself in a position in my last role where I was having to make decisions that were impacting the livelihoods of folks and, you know, having to unfortunately furlough folks, but also trying to figure out ways that I could find work so that I can keep as many people working and employed and earning money for their families as possible. And, you know, after, you know, 2 weeks or so of, you know, making those decisions and trying to figure it out and get solutions and delivering the news. At the end of that, I found myself on the other end of that conversation. And, you know, I found myself for the first time in 13 years, you know, not employed, you know, not employed and furloughed. And, you know, obviously, you know, I had some great people in my corner, you know, even, you know, in the organization that, you know, continue to check in on me and help out and make sure that, you know, they were there as a resource and support. But I really had to have that gut check and just, you know, that self-doubt crept in. And I'm just like, man, well, you know, I felt like I was performing. I felt like I was, you know, meeting expectations. I felt like I was doing a phenomenal job. And am I? Like, was I? And where do I go from here? You know, and the thing that was really important for me in that moment was, you know, I have these boys that are looking at me and how I navigate the situation and how I handle the situation. And they're learning through that process. What do you do when you handle, when you run into adversity? And I just remember telling myself, like, I know what I'm capable of. I know what the formula has been for me. I've been blessed enough that I was able to dig myself kind of out of that pit of self-doubt, get back into that reaffirming myself mindset, and found a great opportunity. I really did. I found a great opportunity. And I just know how important it is to have that power of self-belief, because you're going to inevitably run into individuals in your life that are going to try and convince you otherwise. And it has nothing to do, and I want to be clear, like, it has nothing to do with you and your skill set. It has 100% to do with the fact that somewhere along the way they lost their self-belief.
Yep.
And they're looking for validation that it was the right thing by convincing other folks to let go of theirs.
Yeah. That's just the world, man. We're going to come across people that try to do that. And because of their self-doubt, their insecurities, again, try to, you know, to kind of portray that onto other people. But it's good to have people in your corner, man. It's definitely good to have people in the corner. I remember, you know, when I had left to do Trinity Fitness, and I had left corporate America. And when I came back and again, was able to link back up with you and work together again with you, like those first, you know, several months trying to get back into the swing of things and felt like I was, you know, trying to shake off some rust. I was still in a leadership role in the nonprofit that I was working with. But again, it's different when you're back in the mix and having a huge team and all of the expectations. And again, it's I remember conversations where you're encouraging me about, hey, like, these are things that you've done before. I know what you're capable of. You know, just go ahead and shake that the rust off, do what you need to do and do what I know that you're capable of doing. So it's always great, man, to have people in your corner to remind you of those things when sometimes that self-doubt creeps in. And be able to push those haters away that, again, because of whatever challenges or issues they have in their life, it makes them, you know, kind of cower back a little bit because they see somebody with that self-belief and really feeling like, you know what, no, in the right circumstances and with the right mindset, I really can do anything. So it's yeah, definitely a good word to try to guard against that as much as possible. Not necessarily, you know, to stay awake, because especially in a work perspective, sometimes you can't help but be around individuals like that. But just, you know, continue to be confident in who you are and what you're capable of, so you don't fall victim to that yourself.
Yeah, for sure.
So, you know, having said that, as we talk about some of the things that you're hoping to pass on, and you've spoken a little bit about it, but who are some of the leaders that you've been able to draw from over your years that you're really able to learn from and pull, whether it's through observations, conversations, you're able to pull from that's helped you to develop to the leader that you are today?
Yeah, for sure, man. So obviously it goes without saying, Pops, off rip, mm-hmm. you know, whether I knew it or not, he knew from the onset that, you know, I had these skill sets, or he saw something in me and he just wanted to pour into me as much as possible. All the things that he received from his grandparents, because my father was raised by his grandparents, mm-hmm. to all the things he didn't receive from his parents. And actually kind of thinking about that, that's one of the things that I was able to pick up from him, is how there's value in not only learning what exceptional leadership looks like, right, from others, but also learning, being able to learn from a lack of leadership, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? And being able to put yourself in the space of, I remember what it felt like when I didn't have these things, when I didn't have this type of affirmation, when I didn't have this type of support. And then being intentional about ensuring that nobody else has to experience that if you can influence it. And so definitely Pops, off rip, you know, in terms of people that I know directly, you know, obviously you, man, from, like you said, that first conversation we had, you know, where I was, hey, I'm trying to run this thing like my business. And me really going through the process of just trying to learn, what that would look like and you know, how I do that within the broader scope of a larger organization and, you know, navigating, the personalities and navigating, you know, being able to affect change and, how to actually do those things. And, you know, you were instrumental in helping to, not temper, but just kind of direct and focus a lot of that drive and that ambition and that hunger. And, you know, one of the things that you shared with me very early on, you know, kind of in my leadership walk that I continue to carry with me, right, is Well, actually, there's two things that you shared. But the one that I'm going to talk about first is, I remember you telling me, the results are great, but it means nothing if you don't have the process. And that was because I had jumped into the training world and I had all this operations experience and I knew I could run my mouth so I could teach people what they need to know to be effective. And I was able to churn out some high performers, but I wasn't following the FG. I wasn't giving them all the curriculum and I was making decisions around, they don't really need to learn that. Not having the perspective, the holistic perspective to understand, well, how all of those components that exist in that curriculum do feed something broader than just the function that they're currently in. It could be establishing the foundation for the next function for them. It could be critical information that's a part of our company culture and why we want to continue to make sure that thing is that is carried all the way through. And so I remember you sharing that. And another thing that you shared with me, which I continue to pass on and share, which is, and I think you got it, it was given to you and you pass it on to me, right? But it's, there's not a time to make a decision until it's time to make a decision. You know what I mean? And that's always been just a good way for me to keep myself honest when, I'm really kind of chewing on stuff and overthinking because I went from being a high I type personality and just, hey, no plan, no process. I'm gonna go out there. I'm gonna just talk to people. I'm winging it. It's gonna happen. Right. To really becoming more conscientious as a leader, as I've continued to grow. And so now my mind is constantly going and I'm, playing three-tier chess and I'm like, okay, well, I can do this. But if that happens, I got to do this and do this and do this. And so what decision do I need to make? Mm-hmm. And at times when there's that type of noise and people are looking for you to make that final decision, I've always been able to lean back to that and say, well, look, there's no need to make a decision until it's time to make a decision. Right. And that's given me the opportunity to get more information and to just be more discerning and intentional about the decisions that I'm making. So, absolutely you, Richard, for sure. Somebody who's been a champion for me and, just kind of been in my corner, and encouraged me. And then, I think the other thing you know about me is, I have a habit, a very intentional habit of referring to people that I work with as coach. Mm-hmm. And I do that, because for me, the title of coach is a sign of respect. It's me acknowledging that I can learn something from you, regardless of what level you're at. So people that report to me, people that are team leads, people that are in support positions or people that I report to, I refer to you as coach. Like, hey, what's going on, coach? Hey, what do you need, coach? And again, it's just another reminder for myself that there's something that you can learn from this individual. And so you have to be open to taking instruction, to learning, and then to be able to take those learnings and execute on the field. I try to pull from everybody that I come into contact with for whatever it's worth.
Yeah, I remember those conversations. And it is important, as a leader, we want results, but a lot of times it's not always about that goal, right? It's about the journey and it's about the process and what you learn through that in order. That's really more important than, achieving that actual goal itself. So yeah, man, process is important. But I saw the talent, I saw the skills and I knew, I was like, okay, yeah, he's a great team manager. But I need to get him in training. Like I'm trying to build this team and build what we're trying to do, for the unit. So it was good to be able to work with you even a little bit more intimately in that capacity. So that's good stuff, man. That's good stuff. And yeah, it's being able to draw from the experiences, from your pops and, it just really is a blessing. And again, I think about, the relationship with my parents and just how they've been leaders in their own space over the years and being able to glean from them. My mom was a teacher since I was three. And, I had an opportunity as I got older to kind of go to some of her classes and just see how she, you know, commands the room and how she nurtures and how she teaches, and just, you know, watching my pops kind of ascend it within a corporate ladder over the years as well, and how he navigated certain situations, and just being able to have that type of mentor as well, that, you know, when I get into a spot or if I have some questions, like, hey, pops, like, this is where I'm at right now. What do you think? What do I need to do? And being able to have, you know, that person to glean from. And then, yeah, man, you know, again, somebody that I was blessed to be mentored by and work with. No point in making a decision until it's time to make a decision. And that's, I was even just having the same conversation with my wife the other day. You know, it's, there's no point in stressing yourself out, you know what I mean? And kind of having anxiety about something until you know, all right, yeah, this is becoming a reality. Now let's really talk about it and start making those decisions. So that's been timely for me. So I'm glad that you were able to really get something out of that and hold, you know, that with you over these years. And I'm sure you share that with a number of people, you know, along the way as well. So any other last thoughts? I mean, you know, you've talked about some of the leaders that you've been able to draw from, some of the things that you definitely want to make sure you pass on to your kids and to other leaders that you're looking to develop. Either, like I said, final thoughts as we look to kind of land this plane on episode number 3.
No, man, this has been awesome. Like you said, I think, you know, when we went through it in the last episode, you're like, hey, it's actually good sometimes to just kind of take a step back and think about kind of your own leadership story arc and kind of what's gotten to you to where you're at. And especially, I think, for individuals like you and myself, just because, you know, we're always focused on the kind of the next step and, you know, okay, you know, what else can I give? What else can I give? What else can I, you know, how can I support? Where's the next need so I can fill that need? And you don't really take the time sometimes to just stop and look at like where you've been to get to where you're at. So this has been cool. This has definitely been cool. And hopefully folks, you know, found some value and, you know, kind of the nuggets that, you know, I've been able to share from, you know, my story. And, you know, I know that as, you know, we continue to go, you know, with this podcast and share kind of our experiences and really get into maybe some of the moments of adversity that we've been able to pull from specifically, you know, to develop us as leaders, and we've been able to glean some things from. I'm excited to be able to share those. Cause I think, you know, both of us, we have some super, interesting experiences. And, you know, I talked a little bit about, you know, me having to go through the process of, you know, being furloughed and being the sole provider for my family and what that means. And, I know that there's a lot of people out there that, have, you know, similar stories or in similar situations. And I look forward to being able to share that and how I was able to navigate that. So that people can, you know, take something from it. But, you know, also, you know, we have situations where literally, you know, the building has fallen down around us, like literally, and how you handle that. So, yeah, I'm excited, man. I'm excited for where we're heading and to be able to share.
Yeah. So if you haven't peeped out episode 1, we talked a little bit about that, but that's one of the things that we're hoping to bring to our audience and our listeners is, you know, kind of this series of conversations where we're talking about being mentored by adversity. So within those specific episodes, we'll be bringing on somebody else and, you know, interviewing them, asking them some questions, and listening to their story of adversity and how they've triumphed through it and how they've learned and grown as a leader. So again, we're all about learning and continuing to grow ourselves. So we're looking forward to being able to bring some guests on with us and learn from them and the stories that they're going to share with us.
Absolutely.
So more to come on that. Looking forward to that. If you haven't done so already, please make sure you subscribe. Again, we appreciate the love. We appreciate you guys sticking with us. Hit the like button, hit subscribe, follow us on Instagram, follow us on Facebook, and share. They say sharing is caring, kind of cliche, but it really is. Sharing is caring. So if you care any bit about either one of us, or even if you don't, if you care about some of the information that we're providing, please, again, continue to share that with your folks out there. We sincerely appreciate it. So yeah, so I'm having fun, man. It's been good. Like you said, sometimes you get so focused on, you know, what's next. It's always important to take time to stop and smell the roses and think about some of the things that you've been through, you know, how you've been able to grow to get to this particular point. And even as we're having those conversations, just and mentioning people, seeing their faces kind of pop up in my mind. Yeah, man, it's an honor to really be surrounded and have worked with some really great leaders that we've both been able to learn from and continue to help develop and grow ourselves. So that's it, man. That wraps up this episode. Again, we thank you guys for sticking with us, and stay tuned. Stay tuned for the series on Mentored by Adversity and how folks are getting their MBA in leadership as they grow again through some adverse situations. Rage on that beat, going crazy.
You have just listened to the Legacy in Leadership podcast, hosted by Jimmy Gonzalez.